And for education, you know, you're going to reach more students because not everyone learns the same way. Not everyone consumes information the same way.
Hey everyone, my name is Alan Paterka, and you are listening to Education Is, a podcast about people engaged in teaching and learning. And my guest today is Andrea Skiris, senior web designer and developer at Geometric, and a web accessibility specialist. Andrea is also one of the organizers of the Iowa Web Accessibility's UX and Inclusive Design local meetup right here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Andrea, thank you so much for coming in and talking accessibility with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's start really broad, really big, and let's just say, what is accessibility?
Well, web accessibility is the inclusive practice of removing barriers that prevent interaction with or access to websites by people with disabilities and those using assistive technologies. Now, assistive technologies can include things like screen readers that read all the content out on the page to you, or even voice dictation software like Dragon Naturally Speaking, where a person would use that to navigate a website, or even just using a keyboard alone, like some people cannot use the mouse. So when sites are correctly designed and developed and edited, all users have equal access to the information and functionality therein. Even the inventor of the World Wide Web advocates for accessibility. He's quoted as saying, "The power of the web is in its universality. Access by everyone, regardless of disability, is an essential aspect."
Now, cool. And so how did you get involved with web accessibility?
Well, I started learning web accessibility techniques about 10 years ago from an advocate of accessibility at my job. After I learned some of the fundamentals, I was really intrigued and curious to learn more. And I really love the internet, and I was super excited that my work could directly help people use it easier because, you know, access to the World Wide Web is recognized as a basic human right. Eventually, I began to study more about the accessibility laws in place, and I also ended up purchasing some assistive technology software to learn more and helped conduct some actual usability testing and auditing. I was fascinated by what I learned, so I started teaching others on how to test and ensure that they have an accessible product as well. Last year, I also applied and succeeded in becoming one of the first certified professionals in accessibility core competencies from the International Association of Accessibility Professionals.
So in your schooling, when you were learning web, learning just web design and development, did you go into any detail? Was accessibility kind of part of the program at all?
No, it was not, unfortunately. And that's really interesting. It really should be, though. There's a lot for web developers to learn these days, you know, like frameworks, APIs, JavaScript, and it's easy to forget about the fundamentals of HTML and how that all works and interacts with various technology. I think if they had something like that in school where it was taught early on, it would be more incorporated into every website that you visit.
Why do you think this became such a big passion in your life? Why did you want to pursue this the way that you have?
Really just the drive to help people access the internet easier. And you know, I've just kind of always been fascinated as well by the senses, the human senses and lack thereof. You know, I've had a lot of friends with different disabilities as well, and just knowing that I can help them out. And also, you never know when you might need that kind of assistance yourself. Things like just general aging or accidents or disease, anything like that that could happen later in life could affect how you use the internet. I just want to make sure that as many people as possible know about accessibility and how to improve their products. So if nothing else, I can still use them when I get old, you know?
Right. So Geometric is kind of in the healthcare industry. Is that accurate? Yeah. So is that industry particularly strong in this area? And do you know if like other industries are kind of playing catch up at this point? Or maybe just talk in general about the different industries that you see represented in.
Definitely healthcare has a focus on accessibility, especially if they're a hospital that's for like rehabilitation and things of that nature. You know, most of their patients are going to have some sort of disability or a motor disability that affects how they use the internet. Other industries include, you know, education, which is starting to make a really big push toward accessibility as well. You've seen in the news there's been quite a few lawsuits recently involved with education and having accessible websites, and also making sure that the building is properly up to code as far as universal design goes. Another industry that's really pushing toward accessibility is the government. Government sites have always had like their own set of rules called Section 508 that they need to abide by to be accessible. But then they also just had a refresh of Section 508 that incorporates more of the web content accessibility guidelines. So that's more of a universally accepted guideline to measure how accessible your product is. And now the United States government is also following that.
So what are some of the things that we should be on the lookout for as educators to be not only compliant with the laws, but also making our materials more accessible?
Well, there's a lot of aspects, but definitely check out the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, shortened to WCAG for short. There's about 65 guidelines, I want to say. I have to fact check that.
So it's not a short list. Yeah.
No, it's a long list of things. But really focusing in on all the things that say level A and AA, because those are what is required by law. The AAA level of accessibility is sometimes harder to achieve, but it's nice to have if you can, definitely. It'll help people, but not as wide of a group of people as the A and AA guidelines do.
So are those different guidelines kind of split up across the number of people that they might help assist, or how are those differentiated?
Right, yes. So all the A-level guidelines will help the most amount of people. And if you don't comply with those, it's going to be causing the most barriers, basically, to overcome for people that are using assistive technology. So when I teach about accessibility, I like to build empathy with those we're trying to help. So I often do activities that simulate what it's like to have a disability and how it affects your ability to perform certain tasks. So being as this is an all audio for this podcast, I have a scenario for you to imagine. People that use screen readers, they hear all the text on the page, but not everything on a web page is text. You've got a lot of things like images and the like. So for these kinds of things on the web page, you have to provide alternative text. So an image has alt text. So imagine for a moment, you're on the phone, you don't have FaceTime, and you're just chatting with your friend. You're telling her about how you were going to go through old photos, and you found one or two of them from the ninth grade. How would you describe this image to her over the phone? You might start off with the main subject, the two of you in the picture. Maybe what the emotion of the subjects in the picture is. What are they doing, anything special? Is there any significance to the background or where they are located? You can apply these kind of questions and techniques to writing meaningful alt text for images. Think even if a person cannot see the image, like your friend on the phone, they will be happy to be included in that experience. Remember, though, that not every image needs lengthy alt text. Images that are logos or of other text should include alt text that contains nothing more or less than the exact words in the image. Also, purely decorative images can include an empty alt text, but it's even better to try to get these types of images into the CSS and out of the markup. So that's just one example of something that you could do that pertains back to one of those WCAG guidelines, and that would be something that falls into the level A guidelines.
Those alt text is a level A guideline.
Yes.
Cool.
On the other hand, imagine you were deaf or hard of hearing, or English wasn't your first language, or maybe you have an auditory processing disorder. And this podcast is not going to be very useful to anyone in any of these scenarios without a transcript. And that's why those and captions for videos are also so important. Other things to consider when you're editing your web pages are to make sure that you're using proper heading structure. you know, every page should have a H1 heading and be nested down from there. So you could have as many H2s as you need to kind of break up the content and only use H3s if it's directly under an H2, and so on. Keep the content simple and readable by including bulleted lists where possible, and always include informative link text instead of generic link text like click here or learn more.
So a lot of our instructors might be creating like Word documents. Do these same rules kind of apply in those situations?
Yes, like Microsoft Word documents as well. You can put things like headings in that in there. Generally, though, a web page is kind of more accessible than a Word document in some cases, because not everyone might have that Microsoft Word to open it with. But the web is kind of a more universal.
Another thing I see pretty often, instructors will include an entire link to an external link. So rather than just having a click here, which we've already talked about, may not be as descriptive, they'll have the entire http://, and then spell out the entire link. What's the better way to do those?
The best way for that link text is to include something that lets the reader know what it is going to go to. So, and it, usually it's like an action item. So it could be learn more about da-da-da-da-da, or if it's a link to an external file like a PDF, you can say the title of the PDF in there. And also, it's good if you're linking to an external file type like that to let the user know what kind of file it's going to be going to, because that's kind of, it could be unpredictable to them. They might think they're going to go to another web page, but it opens up a different file. And if you cannot see, that also poses problems. They might not realize something has opened elsewhere.
Talk to me a little bit about the different tools that we might use, browser plugins or other tools that we might use to help us figure out if our online materials are created accessibly or not.
Yeah, there's a lot of different plugins out there and different websites you can go to. There's one called Tenon.io that's you can check your web pages with. There's HTML Code Sniffer, which is a plugin for Chrome and Firefox. I really have been using that one a lot lately. It'll point out all the errors, and then if you click on that, it will actually point out where on the page the error is located, so it gives you a nice visual cue.
Thinking more broadly for a moment, what do you see as being the situation, the current state of affairs in terms of web accessibility?
I think it's getting better. I mean, there's definitely room for improvement, but people are becoming more aware. There's a really big community right now around web accessibility. You can look up more information on Twitter. They have their own Slack channel, and there's that International Association of Accessibility Professionals that's coming together. They have a website and a group you can join and talk to other professionals in the industry. You can talk to people who are more end users on there, who actually depend on the assistive technology every day, and get their opinion and feedback on different problems you might be running into or work that you're doing day to day.
And just recently you gave a presentation kind of showcasing some of the wins, recent successes in web accessibility. I wonder if you could talk about some of those wins.
Right. There's a blog by Marcy Sutton called Allie Wins. And Allie, by the way, is a shorthand word for accessibility. What we do is they take the A and then the number 11 and then Y, because there's 11 letters missing between the A and the Y. So it's kind of a little shorthand way we can share about accessibility news on Twitter where you don't have a lot of characters to work with. And she's curated a bunch of wins. People can submit things that they've worked on or things that they've seen, and things that people are doing in the industry to really push it forward.
Does it seem like the law is really pushing people along and that's what's causing this to change, or are people taking it upon themselves, industry taking it upon themselves upon themselves to improve their own reach?
I think it's a little bit of both. Definitely some people get that extra push from the law, I think, but really it's the right thing to do, and I think that's why most people want to do it, just because it's going to help more people, and you're going to get more customers and more consumers in the door. And for education, you know, you're going to reach more students, because not everyone learns the same way. Not everyone consumes information the same way. So it's really important to reach the widest audience you possibly can. Accessibility is important because hundreds of thousands of people will benefit. There's a lot of reports and studies out there that show that about 13% of students have a disability, but this number can be misleading because not every one of these students chooses to disclose their disability. While others will identify maybe one primary disability, but in fact they have a combination that significantly impacts the types of accommodations that they need. You also never know when you might need an accommodation. Even if you design and develop for those extreme end cases, really everyone benefits, even those without any disabilities to various degrees. So one example of this would be curb cuts. So that's the place where the sidewalk and the curb meets, and it's ramped down. And this was designed so that people with motor disabilities or people in wheelchairs, they can cross the street and get up and down the curb easily. But really, now it's just part of the norm, and we don't really think of that as an accessibility accommodation. You know, parents with strollers use it so they can easily push their baby up off the curb. People riding their bicycles, people texting and walking even. It just makes sense for everybody. So even though those were initially designed as an accessibility feature, everybody uses them now and appreciates that they're there. So these same types of curb cut accommodations we can use in websites as well.
Yeah, I know I appreciate having captions on any video that's on the web, so that if I'm on my mobile phone, I can easily access the video without having to play it. Because I don't usually carry around headphones with me, so it's a lot easier to watch it.
Absolutely, same here.
Yeah. What are the challenges that you see remaining with out there with getting our content on the web more accessible?
I think just awareness. Building awareness is probably the key thing that we can do to keep pushing it forward. I know people think it's going to cost them more money to do, or it's going to take more time to do. But if you bake it in, like I said before, at every stage of the way, it's going to be a lot easier to implement. And that's when you're going to see the biggest change, and it's going to just start to come in together a lot more naturally.
What advice or recommendation might you have for teachers who are putting together their classes?
Well, you really have to kind of put yourself in other people's shoes and think about how they're going to use the website. You know, not everybody takes in information the same way or consumes that data the same way. Think about if you can't see the page, how are you going to lay it out in a way that makes sense? How are you going to describe those images? If you can't hear, how are you going to consume this video? I use Twitter a lot to find new news and new techniques too. Like I said, there's a big community out there that's really passionate about accessibility, and they all use that hashtag A11Y or Ally or Ally. And if you just search for that on there, you'll find a whole bunch of information about new laws and techniques and quick little recommendations about a lot of different things. There's also an Ally Daily newspaper that kind of aggregates all of those, the top headlines, I guess, of the day. So it kind of just all the different websites out there, people go and they look and they see which one is most interesting to them about accessibility. There's different categories you can look into, like science, technology, health, leisure. And so all those different categories you can kind of sort through and find information.
That's great. Thanks a lot for coming in and talking about accessibility and helping us.
I hope it was helpful. If you find yourself wanting to learn more in face-to-face? Because I find that method of learning easier than just kind of rummaging through the internet to find information. You can come to the Iowa Web Accessibility User Experience and Inclusive Design Meetups. We have them about once a month. And they're usually located at the Geometric Building in Cedar Rapids. And that way you can get some more hands-on learning. I demo a lot of the assistive tools and technologies, and I demo a lot of the different automated testing tools as well. So you can learn about a bit more if you come to one of those.
And where could listeners follow up with you on Twitter if they wanted to?
My handle is artistic_abode.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for coming in and talking about accessibility with us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
This has been the Education Is podcast. Thanks for listening. For more episodes, visit educationis.us, subscribe at iTunes U, or wherever you get your podcasts.